It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Later in the hour, we have a special announcement from the Wisconsin Green Building Alliance. They're trying to challenge Wisconsinites to spend more time outside in nature.
First, when you think about big employers in Wisconsin, you might think of industries that have been around for decades, if not centuries. Industries like paper mills, agriculture, manufacturing.
Even as a lot of those industries have declined in recent decades, Wisconsin hasn't really segued into a more dynamic economy, especially one of startups. In fact, according to a new report out on entrepreneurial activity, Wisconsin ranks among the worst performing states in the country.
It's a trend that's not new, but some say Wisconsin is poised to turn those numbers around with increased support from the government for new business ideas.
Here with us to talk about why Wisconsin is lagging behind the rest of the country and what might be on the horizon is Milwaukee Journal Sentinel business reporter Kathleen Gallagher. Kathleen, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Well, you know, not everyone thinks of Wisconsin as the next Silicon Valley or anything. This is not a new issue, but what does this report point to in terms of why we rank so low among states when it comes to entrepreneurship?
Well, what it, you know, the report actually just gives the numbers and ranks the states, and we rank in the bottom of the pack. But what in my reporting, what people have said is that you need to realize that it's not just about high-tech startups. What gets included in this report, it's all business startups in the state. So what gets included are, you know, the beauty shops and the restaurants and all the little mom-and-pop type startups, and we lag overall in all that.
So what's the reason for that, or what are people attributing that to? Is that a bad sign for overall economy or what?
Well, I didn't get a lot of people attributing it to anything. People balked at talking about that part, but it certainly isn't good for an economy because, you know, if you believe in capitalism and you believe in profit, you want that vibrant reinvention of the economy all the time.
Well, are there barriers that we have in Wisconsin to business startups at all levels?
Well, you know, in my coverage, I mean, I think when you talk about the overall landscape, you're certainly, you know, there are organizations that help those kinds of people do their startups, and you could debate whether those organizations have been effective or not, and you can debate whether people want to leave whatever job, you know, say they've got a pretty good job in state government or at the utility, do they want to leave it to do a startup, right? But what I tend to cover more is high tech, and I can tell you in the high tech space, in advanced manufacturing, in life sciences, in IT, information technology, I think in the last 10 years there has been a real effort to cultivate more of those companies. The state has certainly gotten more involved in that effort. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation has more programs to do that. Now the question is, you know, are those things going to work? And are we going to enter the next phase of trying to ramp this stuff up?
Let's focus in on Milwaukee as our biggest city and the state's biggest business center. How does Milwaukee compare to similar cities and urban areas around the country?
Well, the other thing I included in that story, which ran this morning, was a report that was done in Pittsburgh by a big accounting firm and an economic development group in Pittsburgh that really benchmarked Pittsburgh against 17 other similar cities they decided were similar, and Milwaukee was one of them, and Milwaukee really fared poorly in their benchmarking in terms of the amount of venture capital raised. It was interesting for a couple of reasons. Usually it's pretty easy to get the venture capital numbers by state. It's hard to get them by metro area. Milwaukee and Waukesha are kind of one metro area. So that was interesting that they were able to pull that together. And then, in terms of metro areas, they said that in 2013, we had $4.6 million of venture capital per capita. That put us behind Detroit, St. Louis, Minneapolis. You know, we ranked behind most of the cities in the survey. So that was really troubling because Milwaukee's the biggest population area in the state, as you said.
So for big venture capital outfits, is it just that Wisconsin isn't at the top of their list? Or are there other reasons that keep us low on the venture capital totem pole?
Well, that's certainly true that, you know, venture capitalists don't have a lot of reason to come here. We don't have a lot of venture capitalists in the state, And venture capital is important because it's, you know, the real high growth potential companies often get venture capital investment so that they can grow faster, and they're usually in competitive high-tech industries where they need to go fast. There are a couple encouraging signs, I would say, two that come to mind. There's a startup accelerator that's about 2 years old called Generator with an eight in the middle, and they do two classes a year, one in Milwaukee and one in Madison, where they take a handful of startups and put them through a 12-week class and then help them raise money. And they've been, a financier I was talking to yesterday said they're turning out some of the best young companies in the state. There aren't many, though. Another potentially encouraging thing is the state allocated $30 million to a venture capital fund. Sun Mountain Capital out of New Mexico and Kaganza Fund from here, from the Madison area, are going to run it, and it's they soon should be unveiling their plans for how they're going to run it, and that's going to be interesting to see because Kaganza has been a pretty successful venture capital fund.
What do the rest of us get out of it if there is a growth in venture capital and new business startups, especially in those high-tech fields in the state?
You know, I think about that a lot because, you know, take California. It's certainly... Take the Silicon Valley, as you mentioned earlier. It's certainly a mecca for venture capital and high-tech companies. You know, it's one of those, it probably depends on who you talk to there. If you talk to somebody who's working at one of the tech companies and is well-paid and in the mix, you know, they're probably pretty happy. If you talk to somebody cleaning their house, it might not look the same, right? So, but I think generally what you get out of having those kind of companies is you get a connection to, you know, an overused term, the knowledge economy, but you get a connection to the next thing, you know, the real cutting edge, what's going on in the world, that kind of thing that Milwaukee used to be very connected to 100 years ago when it was the toolmaker for the world, right? We were leading the world in that kind of stuff, and we need to get connected to that gestalt again.
Entrepreneur Magazine recently published an article. The title was Three Reasons Startups Should Consider Launching in the Midwest. It made the case that it's cost-effective, labor costs are a little lower, land costs. Wisconsin specifically poised for significant growth, it said, in terms of startups. Do you think that people are going to start buying that argument and looking to places like Wisconsin for their startups?
I think Generator helps a lot in their class of five companies. The winter class that they ran in Madison, four of them were from out of state. One of them came from Mexico and is going to stay in Madison. So I think the more for-profit risk-taking endeavors you can have that create an infrastructure around this kind of activity, the more chance you have of being really connected to the next thing and the newest economy.
Is there a thought that we're going to spin off what Wisconsin is known for, ag industry leading into more biotech industry as our version of high-tech development?
I think there are certainly, you know, University of Wisconsin-Madison is one of the leading academic research institutions in the world for life sciences research, and they certainly have a lot of things coming out of it. Medical College of Wisconsin has really made a splash with some of their DNA gene sequencing stuff. The startups haven't followed yet, and it was troubling when the venture capital, the new state venture capital fund that I mentioned earlier, the legislature, everybody in the politicians in Madison decided to exclude biotech startups from that fund, so that fund is not allowed to invest in biotech, which seems unusual given that UW-Madison is such a force in life sciences research. So I don't know. I think the jury's out on whether that can really happen here given the political climate. On the other hand, UW-Madison has a new technology transfer initiative. It's called D2P, like development to product. And they've hired someone to really try and get more of that life sciences research translated out into companies. So we'll see.
A lot to watch for the future. Kathleen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel business reporter Kathleen Gallagher about a new report that ranks Wisconsin among the worst states in the country when it comes to entrepreneurial activity. Central Time gets the first public announcement of a challenge that the Wisconsin Green Building Alliance is putting to Wisconsinites across the state.
It's called the 30 by 30 Nature Challenge, and it asks participants to commit to clocking a lot of time in the great outdoors this June.
The Wisconsin Green Building Alliance, or WGBA, is a nonprofit in the state that focuses on promoting sustainable development.
Here with us now to talk about the challenge are Corinne Hafel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Green Building Alliance, and Melissa Vernon, Director of Sustainable Strategy at Interface and Board Member of WGBA. Welcome to Central Time, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
And let's start with you, Corinne. Throw down the gauntlet for us. What are the details of the 30 by 30 Nature Challenge?
Well, it's quite simple. We're just asking people to consciously connect to nature. The basic gist of this is that Americans tend to spend up to 95% of their time indoors, and we have a huge disconnect to nature right now. And our built environment has a very large impact on nature, and it's hard to protect something if you don't understand the impact or the importance of that important commodity.
So the specifics of it, if someone wants to be involved, what are you asking people to do in June?
We are just asking them to make a simple commitment to be outside every day. So the idea is for 30 days, we'd like you to connect and consciously connect to nature for 30 minutes. That's it. It's really simple. There's no fee or anything associated, thanks to fantastic sponsors that we already have on board, which include American Family and Evolution Marketing. We're able to bring this to the state of Wisconsin at no charge. All you have to do is commit and want to do this and to learn and benefit from, you know, being in nature.
And Melissa, what are you hoping that people get out of this? If they do this, they spend 30 minutes outside every day in June.
There's a lot of data showing that people can reduce their stress levels, sleep better, great opportunities for people. I also participated in it with my company, and we found great employee engagement. People are just more, they're happier to be at work.
You can actually see an increase in productivity. You can actually see an increase in productivity by connecting with nature. So by simply spending 1 hour outside in nature, right, consciously connecting, we're not looking at our phones, we're actually being outside, you can reduce stress levels by 20%.
Wow.
It just takes 2 minutes to relieve muscle tensions in nature.
So define nature. If I just step out to our cement patio, is that nature?
It can be. It can be really simple. So my first experience with a 30 by 30 challenge, and I should mention that the David Suzuki Foundation in Canada initiated this originally back in 2012. And I stumbled across it last year, and I participated it along with forcing some of my students at MATC, Milwaukee Area Technical College, to do this as well. And it was really interesting because it can range from anything. Like, you can go out and do things like, I really enjoyed going to River Edge Nature Center in Newburgh and participating in their silent sports. But I also had a day where I just really didn't feel like participating, but I forced myself to, and I went in my backyard and I laid on a blanket and I stared at the grass. And within 5 minutes, I was mesmerized by the activity that was occurring in the blades of grass. And before I knew it, the half hour was up, and I felt refreshed, and I stared at grass.
You stared at grass. I guess that says it all. What did your students make of the challenge?
You know, it was really interesting. It was an extra credit assignment, and I made them journal for 15 days about what they did so I could prove that they were actually participating.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several of them in the beginning that were very angry with me. So they would say things like, well, I was working in my garden today and I'm really angry because why can't I have my radio? I don't understand why I can't have my radio. And by the end of the 15 days, it was the exact opposite. Even myself, a person who thought was connected with nature, by the end of the time that I participated in the full 30 by 30, that addiction that I had to that blinking light on my phone was gone.
Yeah, and I want to get to that, the electronics aspect of it, in a moment. But Melissa, you were going to weigh in on this too.
You can also do this at work. So I've done this where I've taken a meeting outside literally go for a walk. It's a great way of becoming more creative and having free-flowing ideas with coworkers when you're trying to plan a meeting or a big event. And it's also, I've done it when you're having personnel conflicts and you need to have that tough conversation with somebody. It's just much easier. The conversation flows better when you can get outside your office, outside your cubicle, and just take that walk.
Now, you did this in your workplace. You're talking about getting outside for a walking meeting. What about just other benefits or changes that you noticed when you did this at work? What happened?
Our employees are very competitive, and so they started challenging each other on, were you really in nature or were you, you know, doing something else? So it really got this camaraderie going, and it also really challenged you to be disciplined, because on these beautiful sunny days, it's easy to spend 30 minutes outside. But when it's raining and you're busy and life is crazy, it's challenging. And so it really kind of gives you a sense of some discipline just for 30 days.
Yeah, I notice you're waiting until June for the challenge.
Yeah.
You didn't ask us to do this in January, but it's a perfect time before the bugs get too intense. What about those rainy days, though?
Well, rain is pretty mesmerizing. You know, it doesn't hurt you. You can go out in it, just simple raincoat and an umbrella. You can also just sit on a back patio and you know, you have to remember that nature's not a destination. It's all around us all of the time. We just have to open our eyes and look at it. So, you know, I spent several days in May last year participating in this, where it was rainy and nasty, watching rain. And it is really can be fascinating watching the water flow and how the trees and the birds, and, you know, where do they go? What do they do?
I want to get to the electronics aspect of this, because that is such a temptation now. Everyone's always attached at the hip to their smartphone or their iPad, you know, listening to their iPods. But you don't want people to bring any of that stuff outside. It should just be you and the natural world. Why is that important, Corinne? We'll start with you.
Well, it's important because we tend to get lost in it. And, you know, they've proven that these electronic devices really tie us down and can increase stress and really have the opposite effect that nature can. And none of us are perfect. When I started the challenge last year, I found myself in the backyard watching my new bird feeder, and I caught myself watching my app and looking the bird up and spending too much time looking on my phone rather than the bird. Mm. But, you know, it's a lesson that we have to learn. And, you know, putting them down is so liberating. I can't. The fact that addiction was gone from you at the end of the 30 days was worth the whole thing altogether.
You detoxed.
I totally detoxed.
Electronic detox. What about you, Melissa? What experience did you have with getting rid of the gadgets?
Well, when we're constantly paying attention to our phones and other devices, we literally lose the ability to have to pay attention to things. And so by releasing that and spending the time in nature, you really get that restoration of your ability to pay attention.
Yeah, actually, an hour in nature will increase your attention span by 20%.
Really?
Yep, and your creativity.
An hour in nature will increase your attention span by 20%?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, sounds like that's something we should be thinking about.
I mean, we've all had those days at work where suddenly we just can't focus anymore.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, going outside at lunch and, you know, sitting there and eating your lunch and just enjoying it
works.
That
something that has to do inherently with nature, or is it just sort of giving your brain a resting spot and maybe walking to the vending machine would do the same thing?
No, it's we have to remember that we are nature. We're part of it. We tend to forget that. And because we've disconnected from that, there's a lot of things, our cortisol levels, our, you know, just our natural hormones and things that get out of whack. And by taking a little bit of time to reconnect with where we came from, will help us sleep better and work better and be more productive and a better person in our community.
And I want to talk about children. So you, Melissa, did this in the workplace. And Corinne, you've done this yourself and with your students. But for you know, kids even younger than that, than MATC students, what would you say about talking to kids about why it matters to get out in nature instead of staying inside playing video games?
There's a great book put out called Last Child in the Woods, Nature Deficit Disorder. I'm really looking at kids not being able to have that creative play outside anymore. They go outside, they say, I went to the park, check the box, I did nature. And so we really have to, the kids are needing to relearn how to just spend unstructured time out into a natural area. And that freedom of learning how to have fun where it's not plugged into the wall, learning to have fun when it's not an organized sport, learning to have fun when it's not a structured park and mowed grass. It's really important for creativity. And there's even a thought that we're going to lose some of our scientists and creative thinkers in the world because we're not allowing our kids to have that creative time outside with unstructured play.
I want to talk more about that and get your answer to that as well, Corinne. But right now we're going to catch up on the news. We're speaking with Corinne Hafel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Green Building Alliance, and Melissa Vernon, Director of the Sustainable Strategy at Interface. They're announcing the launch of WGBH 30 by 30 Challenge, where they ask participants to spend 30 minutes outside and unplugged every day in June.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're back with Corinne Hafel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Green Building Alliance, and also Melissa Vernon, Director of Sustainable Strategy at Interface. They're announcing the launch of the Wisconsin Green Building Alliance's 30 by 30 Challenge, where they're asking participants to spend 30 minutes outside and unplugged every single day in June. Listeners who are interested can go to WGBA.org.
And you can join the conversation now. Does this sound like something you'd like to take part in? What ways do you get outside and spend time in nature? Any thoughts on getting kids outside and setting aside the electronic devices, or on how to do this during your workday? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post over at the Central Time Facebook page.
And before we go to the callers, we've got a couple of folks waiting to talk to you. We were talking about children in the outdoors, Corinne, and we didn't get to you. What do you think we can do to sell kids on the idea of getting out there?
I don't think you have to do much to sell it to a child. You have to give them the opportunity, right? So, you know, these things can be as simple as, you know, going for a walk with your dog or going out and playing some Frisbee or, you know, reading a book outside with your child. You know, if you're struggling to come up with an idea of things to do with your kids, there are some wonderful nature centers all throughout the state. Specifically, we have three partner nature centers that have specific programming geared towards children. So the Mequon Nature Preserve, the River Edge Nature Center, and the Retzer Center have all already committed and are going to be running 30 by 30 events during that time. And if you go to WGBA.org, we have links to all of their sites and their calendars and what's going on. So this doesn't have to be rocket science. It's just giving them the opportunity. It can even be working in the garden, you know, get some chores out of them.
And can you register there too?
Yes, you definitely. Like I said before, this is a free event. We're just asking people to make a commitment, either as an individual, you can get your church group to join, or you can join as a company or organization like Melissa's group Interface. Or one of the things that we're excited about is one of our long-term supporters, We Energies, has already committed to participate in this as well. So, you know, we've gotten interest from communities as well. So the city of Oconomowoc and the Greener Oconomowoc and Oconomowoc Chamber of Commerce has committed as well as of yesterday. We heard that. So
people getting on board. And as if that's not incentive enough, Melissa, I hear that there are prizes.
Sure. If you register on the WGBA's website, we're going to have a photo contest. And every week people can submit their photos and then vote on which one they like. So you can take an electronic device just to capture those great images from nature. My company will be donating a nature-themed carpet area rug. And we have a number of other great prizes like a bird guide for kids from the Madison Audubon Society.
Now let's go to our phones now. By the way, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. What do you find changes in you when you make time to get out in nature? What's the effect on your life and the way you think about the world? 1-800-642-1234. And we'll go now to Matt, who's joining us from Brainerd, Minnesota. Hey, Matt.
Hi. I've always been a firm believer in letting your kids go outdoors. And I have a four-year-old son, and we spend at least an hour every day outdoors. And he just has fun exploring the world around him. He'll pick up leaves, ask me what kind it is. It's a great teaching opportunity as well as a great use of imagination. I mean, he picks up sticks and has imaginary sword fights with, you know, pirates that he imagines are out there. So I greatly encourage any parent to make sure their kids get outdoors because it makes them happy and healthy. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate you calling and sharing what you do with your son. Melissa, as an additive incentive, I understand there are some kind of encouraging statistics about, you know, children in schools and what nature can do there.
Yeah, it's not just spending time outside, but getting access to nature from inside our buildings, which is where we spend most of our time. There's been some research showing that schools that are daylit, the kids learn 20 to 26% faster when they have access to that natural daylight, and their test scores go up.
That's pretty encouraging. And any other findings like that to other institutions, hospitals, for instance?
Yeah, hospitals as well have seen a really tremendous increase in how quickly patients recover from surgery. Their hospital stays are 8.5% shorter, and they need fewer pain medications if they have a view of nature out their window. Mm.
All right, let's go back to our calls now. William is joining us from Green Bay. Hey, William.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm 52 years old, and I've kind of flipped your equation around. I try to spend maybe a half hour indoors and the rest outdoors.
You're advanced.
As much as possible. And, I mean, it really flabbergasts me the way that society has gone with just zipping themselves out of nature and not being part of it. I can't imagine that. When I was a kid, I was spending anywhere from 4 to 6 hours a day outside. What I do now is I try to spend a minimum of 3 hours outside a day. And the results, if I don't, I just don't feel well, you know. We are part of nature. We need to be out there interacting with it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts, William. 3 hours a day in nature, obviously that's something that we can aspire to. Lots of us have busy lives, but you know, he's talking about how he feels better every day. What strikes you about his comment, Corinne?
Well, what's interesting about it is after doing this challenge, you're actually going to find that 30 minutes is not enough for you. You're going to find ways and find that time to be out there more. And one of the reasons we feel that this challenge is so important in what we do and what our mission is, you know, we want a sustainable built environment. We want to facilitate, we want to educate that. And today's buildings, not a lot of the time, they are not designed to embrace nature or give people the opportunity to be outdoors and engaging. And by helping the occupants and those who are invested in building these buildings, and even those who are designing those buildings, understand that is really important. And the only way they're going to fully understand it is by connecting. So, you know, we want people to get out there and do that. So definitely go to our website, wgba.org, and sign up and join free of charge.
Okay, well, thanks, William, for that call. And we'll go next to Jenny, who's joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, I called in, and I think that it's a great idea to have the 30 for 30 challenge. I think it would be even more great if it was something that was a challenge that was implemented for the entire summer or possibly even the spring, as opposed to being just for the month of June.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Jenny. Some people saying you got to go further.
That's fantastic, Jenny. And we're always looking for opportunities to expand. And you know, if this is successful, we can always take it elsewhere. And you know, we're always looking for volunteers to help us do that. So, you know, come on board.
Melissa, I'm curious about when you did it with your company, what sort of the varying, you know, responses were from people? Because there must have been people who were reluctant, who didn't like to go outside. Maybe they liked their creature comforts and their computers. Did you see transformations happening?
Sure, definitely. I mean, as a company, we have a big sustainability mission. And even down to the design of our carpet products, we use nature as inspiration for those styles. So it wasn't as hard for us because we already talk about this every day at work as we're selling our products, the nature inspiration. So it was a really great way to leverage what we're already doing at work and getting outside and then leveraging this conversation with our customers and talking about why nature is so important outside as well as inside our built environments.
Excellent. And I want to dig a little deeper, Corinne, into something you said about if people don't know nature, they won't love it, they won't appreciate it. Is your sense that people have gotten a little divorced from it and it's time to make sure that people have a love of nature? You said we are nature, and to encourage that in subsequent generations.
Oh, definitely. I guess another example would be if you go on a junk food, fast food binge for a very long time and you decide to detox. Or, you know, and afterwards you had no idea how bad you felt when you were eating all of that garbage food, it's very similar with your experience in nature. You don't miss it because you didn't know that what benefits it has. And until you reconnect and give yourself that opportunity to realize, you know, the benefits, the reduced stress, the better sleep, the more creativity, and the better sense of community that it brings. I mean, that's why we're having all of these online things with Facebook and our blogging and all that sort of jazz. You don't have to do this alone. You can enjoy and get inspiration from others and, you know, get out there and get dirty or sit in the sun and just soak up some vitamin D. It's simple.
As some encouragement, before we let you both go, could you share with us what was the most joyful, fun experience that you had on your 30-day nature challenges? Melissa, let's start with you.
Sure. I have a small toddler at home, so it's always fun to take her outside and just watch the wonderment of her in her eyes as she discovers, you know, seeds from the prairie plants or the stick in the grass or the worm. And just everything she looks at is new and different, and it's just so great to relive that through her eyes.
Excellent. Oh, sounds like fun.
Well, definitely. And I mentioned my MATC students before, and watching their transformation over the 15 days was really remarkable. But even better than that, my 30 days outside, my garden never looked better.
That's a good bonus. Well, thank you both so much for coming on and sharing this challenge with us and with Wisconsin.
Well, thank you for your time.
We were speaking there with Corinne Hafel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Green Building Alliance, and Melissa Vernon, Director of the Sustainable Strategy at Interface. And they just announced the launch of WGBA's 30 by 30 Challenge. They're asking participants to spend 30 minutes outside and unplugged every day in June.
It's time for our state news roundup with Assistant News Director at WPR, Noah Ovshinsky. Noah, good to see you again.
It's good to be here. Good afternoon.
Well, a little bomb dropped in Wisconsin politics in the last hour.
Yeah, absolutely. We just found out that Congressman Tom Petri of the 6th District, which is East Central Wisconsin, he announced that he will be announcing officially on Monday that he will not be seeking re-election. And he's been a congressman there since 1979.
Right. Long-serving congressman. Now, this is not out of nowhere. In some ways, he has a challenger, or he would have had a primary challenger.
Right. So Senator Glenn Grothman announced a few weeks ago that he would set up a primary challenge with Congressman Petri. So Petri was at least facing one, if not more, challengers in a Republican primary.
And we don't, of course, know what was in Congressman Petri's mind as he did this. But this comes really soon after the announcement of that primary challenge from a person I think everyone agrees is a more conservative Republican.
Right, absolutely. And Glenn Grothman, when he made the announcement that he was going to run for Petri's seat, he alluded to the fact that he felt that Petri was a little bit too moderate, that he was too supportive of compromise, and that it was time to bring more fiscal discipline to Congress in Washington, D.C.
If there's been one storyline and coverage of the Republican Party nationwide, it's this trend of challengers from the right, often aligned with Tea Party organizations, challenging Republicans viewed as moderate or at least not as conservative as they could be.
Right, exactly. Now, what's interesting with Petri now not running for re-election, what'll be interesting to see is what happens in a potential Republican primary. Glenn Grothman, you know, will he still run? Other Republican state lawmakers have expressed an interest in this seat. So with Petri out of the mix, it'll be very interesting to see who steps forward to run for this seat.
That's on the Republican side. Might there be Democrats saying, gosh, I don't think I could have beat Petri, he's moderate, he reaches out across the political spectrum. If I'm running against a more conservative Republican, maybe I've got a shot.
Right. That's true, although it is a pretty conservative district as a whole. So it's true that a Democrat or Democrats may step forward, but at this point, it's unclear what the field's going to look like.
You know, another storyline in national politics is a party feels like, hey, if we've got a safe seat, we've got a Democratic district, we've got a Republican district, let's go as liberal or as conservative as we can here.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what happens with this race. Obviously, this is a surprise, mm-hmm. you know, and we haven't heard from Petri yet as to why he's retiring. A statement hasn't been released yet. So it's a little bit unclear why he's doing it, but we'll find out more on Monday.
All right. Well, another longtime Wisconsin political fixture, really, also announced today. Today, was it? Or yesterday, maybe. He's not going to run. Mike Ellis, currently the Senate president.
Right. So the Senate president, Mike Ellis, announced that he won't be seeking re-election. And he, like Petri, has been involved in government for a long time, I think 40-plus years. He made the announcement just a few days, though, after a video surfaced, an undercover video, in which Ellis talks at a Madison bar about setting up an illegal political action committee to attack his Democratic opponent. So this announcement comes at a time when he's embroiled in this controversy.
And what did he say? We do have a statement from him.
Right. So Ellis says he's retiring because of the environment at the Capitol. He says there just isn't any room for compromise anymore, and indicated that, you know, special interests hold too much sway right now at the Capitol. And he said that's why he's retiring.
But it's right after this video came out. Tell us a little more about what we saw in the video and where it came from.
Right. So in the video, Ellis talked about who would likely contribute to this super PAC and how much, as well as the fact that he would tap his brother to head it. What Ellis suggested in the video was essentially he wanted to create what it's supposed to be, an independent super PAC, but in fact would be controlled by his campaign. And coordination between super PACs and campaigns is illegal.
And Mike Ellis has been a longtime supporter of certain campaign finance reform laws. I remember him coming on the Tom Clark Show back in the day being a leading Republican advocate for campaign finance laws.
Right. What's particularly interesting about this controversy is the fact that Mike Ellis has been at the forefront of the campaign finance reform effort in recent years. So that's a really interesting twist given the substance of this undercover video.
And he has said, I was talking about this. I didn't realize as I was talking about it was illegal. I found out it was illegal. Decided I wasn't going to do it off camera.
Right, exactly.
And now the one of the weird wrinkles here is where this video came from, right? It's the group, the James O'Keefe's group.
Right. It was a hidden video by James O'Keefe. And the group has been in the headlines before, quite a bit, actually. Mm-hmm. Previously released hidden videos targeted and eventually led to, actually, the shuttering of the Association of Community Organizations for Reform. That's also known as ACORN. He's also targeted NPR and I believe Planned Parenthood as well.
But normally groups associated with the left or viewed by conservatives in NPR's case as a liberal media outfit, this is Republican.
Right, exactly, which makes this very interesting. Although this wouldn't be the first time that he has targeted conservatives. It is interesting, though, given his record.
And Wisconsin politicians over the years have gotten into trouble talking in bars. This is there was a Wisconsin mayor who got into trouble some years back, making some salacious comments, caught on video, caught on somebody's phone. I guess if there's a lesson for aspiring politicians, be careful what you say when you're out in public drinking.
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Agreed.
And that's my viewpoint. No, I'm editorializing a little there, but I think it makes good political sense. Well, moving away from political news, this a disturbing discovery by the DNR. We heard from a DNR wildlife expert yesterday, white nose syndrome, this disease that affects bats in the state.
Right. So this is the first time the DNR has found bats with the so-called white nose syndrome in Wisconsin. They were found in an abandoned mine in Grant County. And white nose syndrome actually is caused by a fungus that essentially causes bats to wake up prematurely from hibernation. And once awakened, the bats can sometimes die because of a lack of food or they dehydrate. And this is something that has literally killed millions of bats across the country. So it's a big deal. Not completely unexpected, but it's still a big deal to hear that this has been found in Wisconsin.
And the worry is now that we found this one instance based on what we know in other states, we're going to see more of it.
Yeah. Scientists say that in all likelihood, this will spread. Where it spreads and when it spreads is still an open question at this point.
And they're doing what they can and inviting the public to do what they can. What kind of efforts are available to help at least slow the spread of this thing?
Right. So in this particular case in Grant County, scientists think it was a bat from a neighboring state that was exposed to the fungus that brought it to Wisconsin. But the DNR is also asking humans, us, to do our part in helping prevent this this disease from spreading. The DNR says landowners can help by putting up fences at cave entrances to keep humans out. They also say owners of commercial caves should ask their visitors, if they are wearing the same clothes or using the same camera that they may have had on them when they visited other caves. And of course, the idea being that if they knew that they were exposed to other caves where white nose syndrome was or had been found, that they could prevent that from entering that cave.
That's interesting. It's kind of like invasive species efforts for, taking boats from lake to lake or firewood for emerald ash borer, a similar sort of campaign.
There's definitely a parallel there. Yep, absolutely.
And bats, this isn't just a bat story. This affects more than bats.
Yeah, I mean, they're not just cute. And of course, I may be a minority, but I do think they're very cute. But in addition to being cute, they eat a lot of insects that would have otherwise, bitten people or harmed crops. How much do you think a single brown bat can eat?
Well, I heard the DNR person yesterday. The answer is a lot.
A lot. More specifically, a single little brown bat can eat 600 mosquitoes in an hour.
And I approve of that.
As do I. So this white nose syndrome, if it's a win for anything, it's a win for the mosquitoes.
Okay. Well, this is something that we're going to be watching, definitely, you guys in the news and us on Central Time. Briefly, two reports looking at performance by Wisconsin state government. What's out there?
Yeah, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group gave Wisconsin an A- this week in their annual report card that looks at spending transparency. Why is this newsworthy? Well, because it's a huge improvement from last year when the group gave the state an F.
Wow, that's a big jump. So there's got to be something that happened between now and then, I assume?
Yeah, the improvement is due mostly to the state's new online database of spending called Open Book Wisconsin.
So what I could go and visit this and see how the state's spending money.
Yeah, basically, there's a rundown of what the various state agencies are spending on what, and it goes back to 2008. The site itself averages about 850 visits a day. Not a huge number, but state officials, say even if one person uses it a day, then it would have been worthwhile to do.
A-, room for improvement?
Wisberg did indicate the state could do more to increase transparency. The group says it is still tough to get data on subsidies from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. So that group would like to see better access to that kind of information.
And then briefly, our election system was rated pretty good.
Yeah, the Pew Charitable Trusts ranked Wisconsin's 2012 elections as the third best in the nation. We ranked high because of high turnout, the amount of information the state provides voters. And Wisconsin also has comparatively short wait times, actually, for voting. So ranked our elections ranked very high.
All right, Noah, thanks for joining us again.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
Noah Ovshinsky is Central Times news guy, official title Assistant News Director at Wisconsin Public Radio.